the 2006 International AIDS Conference, Time to Deliver, brought to you by KaiserNetwork.org.
Good morning. My name is Craig McClure. I'm the Executive Director of the International AIDS Society. I want to welcome you here today. A number of us, and seemingly a number of people in the audience, had some trouble running over from the south side of the conference venue to the north side. This is the only major session hall in the north side, so I think a lot of us are still getting used to this venue. Our women participants seem to have taken longer than the men. I don't know if that's because we're more aggressive and pushed our way and ran our way or what. But Sipho Mtati from Treatment Action Campaign in South Africa is due to join us. Barry Hull, I think, from the International Community of Women Living with HIV and AIDS. And our chair, who is the incoming president of the International AIDS Society, Pedro Kahn, is not a woman, but is also late. But we're going to get going, and because time is running out, the purpose of this session was for all of you to give people a chance from civil society in particular who are attending the conference, because after all, this is primarily a civil society conference on HIV and AIDS, albeit with UNAIDS as a strong partner in the organization of the meeting. But the community co-organizers, the International AIDS Society, and most of the people participating, or at least the majority of people participating, we're all from civil society. Marianne, I might get you to come and join us, if you'd like, from ICASA. Would you like to join the panel? Sure, come on up. Marianne Torres, also from one of our community partners for the conference, ICASO. So really, this session was an opportunity for civil society to have an informal discussion with a number of us about reflections on how the UNGAS review meeting held in New York a couple of months ago, the results of that meeting, the process of organizing that meeting, and some discussion about the potential way forward in terms of meeting the goals that were set in the 2001 declaration and then refined and revised for better and for worse in the review meeting. So we're going to start off with some very brief comments from a number of people, including a government representative from Canadian government, from CEDA, Stephen Wallace, views from the community in the South, from Treatment Action Campaign, from SIPO when she arrives, from Latin America and the Caribbean, from Lacaso, Edgar Carrasco. Michelle Sidibe from UNAIDS has joined us today. And then I'm going to turn over in a second to the chair of the session, who is Dr. Pedro Kahn, the incoming president of the International AIDS Society and our first president from a developing country, from Argentina. So, yes, here's to that. So I'll turn it over to Pedro. The other people on the stage today will join the panel discussion once we have the brief comments from the five speakers. We're going to start with Stephen Wallace and then move on to Omololu Falaubi and then on to Edgar Carrasco. Pedro.
Good morning, everybody. Apologies for being late. My first service as president of the International Society has been going to the wrong building, so I hope this does not set the tone for my term. So, without further ado, we will start with the Canadian government view. Stephen Wallace, please. Is the microphone there? Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. Good morning. It's a yes. Happy to do so. Can everybody hear me, by the way? Is that all right? Well, listen, good morning. First of all, I salute your dedication to the dawn. the people who are here, I think, are going to participate in an interesting dialogue. And I've just thrown all my notes away because I think this is not about formal presentations and about going through PowerPoint presentations and so on. So I'm going to just ad lib a few things from really a personal perspective as one of the delegates that helped negotiate the agreement. Yeah. Okay. I can get a little closer. Is that all right?
Yep.
Yes, I'm coming. Let me start by saying who I am. My name is Stephen Wallace. I'm with the Canadian International Development Agency. I was part of the Canadian delegation helping to negotiate the declaration less than 10 weeks ago. My perspective as part of that delegation, therefore, is colored by my development background, some of the comments that I would have come from that perspective. What I think struck me most, because I had done a number of negotiations over the last 20 years or so in that particular context, about was how some things haven't changed at all and some things have changed quite a lot. What hasn't changed is the fundamental culture and character of a UN negotiation, which is slow and it's painful and it's awkward and it's uncertain. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're supposed to be giving the declaration out to the world, it is scary. But it is still an extraordinarily important and vital aspect of trying to build a sense of common purpose and to check the kind of sense of consensus that there is out there. So I was struck by how that was the same. And it is something, you know, between New York and what they put in the water there and capitals and how you work with a whole range of actors that I find is still something that needs to evolve. I was also struck, however, I remember 20 years ago doing negotiations where, you know, we would caucus as the G7 and a few people in the back room would cook up a deal, we'd come out, we'd display it, and then we'd go home. It doesn't happen that way anymore. I was struck by the kind of pluralism that you saw and the kind of skeptical scrutiny that came from civil society. And when we would have delegation meetings in the morning, I would walk in. I didn't see many government people there, but I saw a lot of people who knew a lot of things and who asked a lot of questions and were quite, I thought, were quite active and were quite influential in the way things happen. So the process for me has been a real contrast. A huge number of things that still need to be worked on if we are to do this in a way which is better. I was waking up this morning thinking, I wonder if we negotiated the declaration at this meeting, if the declaration would have been different than what we did 10 weeks ago. I bet it would. So struck by a number of things. Struck by how when you build up a sense of global consensus around issues and what is important, how you can't take it for granted. I thought, you know, from what we are doing in Cairo and Beijing and the 2001 declaration and all of the things that we had built up as a global community, that was the platform for going forward. That's not the case. You got to go. What happens very often with these negotiations is people go back to fundamentals. People challenge. People say, "Well, I'm not sure that we should have agreed to this," and so it's almost like two steps forward, two and a half steps back, another couple of steps forward. It's that kind of a process that struck me. It's not taking one step and going forward. It's really throwing everything in a big pot again and mixing it up and hoping that what comes out is semi-coherent, hoping what that comes out is to the measure of the kind of devastating challenge that this planet has still not met. So I was struck by that and how much more needs to be done to try to make this kind of process of building global consensus work and so that it indeed can help and not hinder the kind of accelerated progress that we all want. So what are some of the things that I saw that people fought very hard for? I was struck by the role that engagement played in the discussions and the negotiations. That part was good. There were missing parts. the texts, for example, in communities at risk, didn't fully reflect the kind of engagement that you needed. I was struck by this sense of accountability. You know, political declarations had been 10 years ago treated as aspirational political objective setting, nice sounding words, and not much more. I was very struck by how you're trying to hardwire in these political declarations a means to measure and to follow up and to keep things on the front burner. I was struck by how hard a number of people worked to put the words rights and empowerment and equality and women in the same sentence. I was struck by that a lot. I was struck by its importance, and there are many things that we did not do in that declaration, but that is one thing that I think that is a basis for moving forward, and we can talk about it. So we have a kind of, on the one hand, on the other. I was on the funding side, nothing that you could take to the bank. You have recognition. You have a sense of progress. You do not have the kind of things that you would see in a pledging conference. This is a political declaration. So you've got some things there, but other things not. I was struck by how the 2001 declaration helped condition some of the things in what happened 10 weeks ago. This notion of health systems and the focus on people and how they are play into it. The focus on the workforce, the sort of basic underpinnings, both public and private and community people affected by HIV/AIDS, that sense of how that needed to be integrated more into the process. I was struck by the sort of the evolution from 2001 to 2006. Overall, I had a sense that we could move forward, but that we had to do a number of things that we hadn't done in 2001 and that we're going to need to do now. I was struck by how we have to kind of make a way of saying that political declarations are just part of a sort of process of a political agenda which is dynamic and ongoing. You know, we do not revisit these things every 5 years and decide at that point what's going on. A political declaration should reflect where we are and where we're going in a way that is fitting with the overall political agenda. So we need to integrate a political agenda, and we need to integrate a lot of the things that are in that declaration in ways that kind of institutionalize it and spread it out and make the kind of ownership and the kind of coordination work a lot better. And I think some of my colleagues on the stage will talk about it, but I have a sense that you have to take, as you move into that sort of rhetoric to action, you have to sort of break it down into the kind of concrete, action-oriented, personal, and real kinds of things that then will make this declaration succeed or not. So that jury is still out, I think. A lot of work remains ahead of us, but you can see a number of the reference points. I'd stop there just to try to throw out some ideas for discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. So our next comments will come from Omolulu Falobi from Nigeria, from the African Civil Society Coalition.
Thanks. Hi, morning, everybody. My name is Omolulu Falobi. I work with a group called Journalists Against AIDS Nigeria. But I guess I'm here because there's a broad-based coalition called the African Civil Society Coalition on HIV and AIDS that I've been working intensively over the past 5-6 months to try to mobilize more intensively the community response to the epidemic in Africa. I just spent 1 minute talking about that coalition and then exchange some of my ideas about UNGAS and what we are planning to do around that. You know, as all of us know, Africa is at the epicenter of the epidemic. And over the past 20 years in some parts of Africa, we've had a topsy-turvy response to the epidemic. We have countries like Uganda and Senegal that have responded quite early, and then many other countries, majority of other African countries that have been quite criminal in their own response. And it's a shame that, 25 years after, we have many declarations, but we haven't had, much action. And so earlier this year, in the lead up to UNGAS, as well as Africa's UNGAS, which was the Abuja Summit on AIDS, TB, and Malaria that held in Abuja May 2 to 4 this year. Many organizations, civil society organizations in Africa and also international NGOs working in Africa, decided to come together to coalesce a stronger response that is unified, that is intense, and that is cross-cutting, that is pan-African, to especially in this era of universal access. There have been commitments everywhere. 2001, the DOC at UNGAS, 2001, also the Abuja, the original Abuja summit, also by the African Union, and then the EU declaration, the G8 commitment last year on universal access. So it seems to be a great time to deliver. And we thought that from experience of 20 years, 25 years, people won't deliver unless they get pushed to do that. And that also, we won't work very efficient and effectively as NGOs if we work, you know, separately. And that we need to tap into the energy and the enthusiasm and the sheer repertoire of knowledge among African communities and NGOs and forge a very strong country-level regional response to this epidemic. So we had a meeting in Abuja early in April that was attended by over 90 NGOs from, you know, up to 20 countries in Africa that established the African Civil Society Coalition on HIV and AIDS. And, you know, a profile around that was circulated just a few minutes, you know, here. For us in Africa as NGOs, we think that we're in a time of action. We're in a time where we need to really push our government and push ourselves to greater intensified action. And UNGAS represented that kind of opportunity. But before that, we had Abuja. And as I said, Abuja is our own UNGAS. And because we had the opportunity to have had this meeting a month earlier of African NGOs, we were able to come up with a very clear common position that articulated what African NGOs wanted, you know, in terms of what countries need to deliver from 2001 Abuja and on to the 2006 summit. So, but in the process of Abuja and in the actual meeting itself, civil society was quite very strong. And we're extremely pleased that our work, you know, put fruitful. And the Abuja outcome documents, the common position to UNGAS that the AU signed, as well as the Abuja call for accelerated action on HIV and AIDS, were really very strong, effective documents. And we were actually very proud that our leaders were able to achieve that. And unlike UNGAS, we had very clear targets on TB, on prevention, on treatment, on care support, on counseling, on VCT, was quite thorough. And leaders committed themselves to reaching 100% prevention for all Africans by 2010, 80% treatment, at least 80% treatment for all Africans, 100% condom access, and it was very clear, articulate agenda. So we're hoping that we're going to take that into UNGAS because that was an African common position that the head of states adopted. But unfortunately, many things went wrong. The AU that was supposed to spearhead that delivery failed to do its job, and we are going to work very hard with AU because the AU is the African Union is a very important regional institution that we're going to work into the land on that score. But also many of the missions, the African missions in New York, failed to implement Abuja. That was a very clear disconnect between what the capitals in Africa agreed to and what the missions in New York were saying. And we had to fight that battle, you know, between the AU and the countries and the missions and write petitions and stage and write letters and make a lot of, we had to make a lot of transatlantic, Atlantic phone calls. Unfortunately, we didn't get a lot of leverage out of that. Yes, paragraph 10 of the political declaration confirmed and acknowledged the support, the intense response by African governments and African institutions such as the AU had given to HIV/AIDS, but it didn't explicitly state and refer to the common position, which contained the clear targets, and for us that was a big gap. But on the positive side, it was very great for us as NGOs. It was the first time that you have NGOs in Africa coming united. So we didn't have all of these international NGOs or African NGOs working separately. Well, one body, one voice, one message. And I think our leaders got the message and recognized that commitment that we have. So leading on from UNGAS, what do we need to do? Plenty of work. From experience, we know that commitments are that declarations won't make change happen, you know, with our leaders, also with ourselves. And we are taking steps as African society to ensure that we fulfill our roles. That is stated very clearly in the Abuja documents. The Abuja documents provided that civil society should play a leadership role in monitoring the accountability of the response in ensuring that targets are set by December 2006. So we are working very intensively with the AU, with the African Union, and with UNAIDS. We have a meeting with Peter Pio tomorrow morning to get UNAIDS to clearly articulate what he has in plans for, what plans he has in stock for developing, for supporting countries in Africa to set guidelines towards target setting. We're going to have sessions tomorrow also on universal access. We're really hoping to hear from partners in government and UNAIDS, on their response to that. But what we need to do, very frankly, also is that we need to take the work from global to local. Such declarations are very important. They are a nice platform for us to act, but the work has to be done at country level. That's where the impact has to be felt, and that's where the NGOs have the most resources and the most strength. And we're going to work intensively ourselves to ensure that UNA strengthening is working country level, the UN co-sponsor strengthening is working country level, and work intensively with society partners in that level. And the coalition comprises many partners, including AFRICASO, that is a very, very strong member, and the Network of African People with HIV, SQUAD, the women organization. So it's a very cross-cutting platform. So we're going to translate all of that energy to work on country level, ensuring that NGOs there, national networks there, are fed with appropriate information, and we give them support, capacity building in MIE, in advocacy, in negotiation, so that this year actually begins the road for Africa to recovery on HIV and AIDS, and that by 2010 we have something to report on. And not just 2010, but that's far ahead. But by December, we ensure that all African countries, we open up all African countries will have set very clear targets based on the Abuja outcome document that was very, very explicit, and that there's no reduction on the targets in Abuja. Even though we know that some countries are very anxious to reduce that, but we are very, very, we are trying to be very ferocious ourselves in doing that. And what we want from all of you, partners internationally, is the kind of support that you give to us in UNGAS. By recognizing that we have our own, that Africa has its own response and that its own very clear perspectives, and that we have our own voices and that we can speak for ourselves, and that you should encourage us, you should also consult us very, that the time in the past where Africa, was spoken for by other people in the north, should be gone, and that as the continent most affected by this epidemic, as people who are most at risk, who are vulnerable to HIV and AIDS, we need to get support. We need to get the space and get your support in articulating our own perspectives and enriching our own skills. Thanks.
Thank you, Ngolulu. Now we will hear Edgar Carrasco from La Casa Venezuela talking about civil society involvement in negotiations. Edgar.
Yes. Do we ask for the slides? Probably will be better because it's too early in the morning for me to speak English, and we will help a lot for you. Good morning, everyone. I'm really glad to be here to continue sharing the issues regarding UNGAS follow-up. Let me share with you an experience we have been preparing in the region to follow up and monitor the obligations and let's say better the goals of the Declaration of Commitment in terms how governments in Latin America and the Caribbean are the performance of the government on the compliances of the goal of the Declaration of Commitment. We start to taking the experience on human rights organizations on the issue of monitoring performance of the government. We start to monitor approaching sub-regionals in a sub-regional way. That means in our region we have different economical agreements that gathered some countries to be together in order to dealing with commercial issues. We decided in trying to look for the leadership of government in the region, how can governments approach sub-regionally those crucial issues regarding to aid, for example, access to treatment. And for that reason, we approach in our second monitoring and evaluation report of UNGAS, the sub-region of what we call Southern Corn, which composed by Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, and Chile. And we tried in the context of these sub-regional agreement, commercial agreement, to look for how we can improve the international cooperations in issues regarding HIV/AIDS. I would like to share with you the what we call the lesson learned in our last report. I got some copies to share with you also, in the three versions, Spanish, Portuguese, and English. And the findings after we prepare the reports and we collect all the information at country and the regional level are there is a need. Next, please. Next slide. Yes. In this process of monitoring of the accomplishment of the UNGAS goal by member states from civil society, for the organization in civil society is a very innovative experience for the future. And for that reason, we have a lot of challenges to address. Next, please. Oops. We consider after this report there is a need to continue dissemination of the meaning, the content, and amplitude of the Declaration of Commitment in the fight against AIDS. Also, we have to continue the dissemination of the political declaration among civil society groups. This is an important issue because it's still a lot of ignorance, a lot of disinformation and misinformation about what is the meaning of the Declaration of Commitment and how government and civil society have to address the accomplishment of the declaration. It is a tremendous need to secure. Next, please. Looks wave to secure appropriate and enough financial and human resources to be able to exercise the monitoring and evaluation process in the region. Next. It is a need to introduce in communities the idea that the process of monitoring and evaluation is a continuous process and not just only when, you know, the UNGAS happen in New York. Access to information was one of the most important findings in terms of how communities are able to access to information to monitor the performance of the government. And what was the biggest challenge in all of those countries we monitored? The main issue was the access to information, how to improve the ways that civil society are able to access to information. Next, please. It is important to extend the dialogue between civil society and governments, aiming at the comprehension that monitoring and evaluation are a very important contribution to improve public policies. In some ways, the process of collecting information requires sensitivity from the both governmental and non-governmental sector, because there is conflicts between civil societies and government in the process to collect that information. In that regard, in some ways, this is connected also to the fundamental right to access to information, also to the need to have a clear idea how these reports are improving public policies. Next, Another challenge, another finding is related how civil society, even governments, are able to analyze objectively the information gathered, and how those results of the monitoring evaluation are able to reflect the reality. Because if you approach communities in terms of prevention in our sub-region, you will see that some group of population or vulnerable population, which is are not really involved in the process of prevention, are not receiving services directly, like transgender population, they are going not, that if you, you are going to find contradiction with another vulnerable population. There is different views in community how governments are responding, and that depends of the group of people who are involved or belong to. Also, there is a tremendous need in the region. Next, please. Regarding next. Yeah, it is important. There is a need to collect and systematize cases of violation of human rights of people living with HIV and population in vulnerable conditions. One of the important findings that there is no data, there is no information on civil society. There is a lot of denounces, but there is no systematization of that information, which is really important in order to build those reports biannually. And finally, we consider there is also a need for support the process of capacity building in monitoring and evaluation, specifically the declaration of commitment and also the political declaration, which is a process totally different than the programmatic view of monitoring and evaluation. We have to introduce in communities the idea how communities and government can monitor adequately the declarations and commitments on the context of international commitment. Thank you.
Gracias, Edgar. So our next speaker will be Michelle Sidibe, who will tell us what's the UNAIDS recollection on this process and the UNAIDS role in supporting the process at the country level.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Michelle Sidibe, I think you noted well. Thank you. Thank you. So, no, I think what is very important to share, Stephen was reflecting on the process. I will not come back to that one, but I want to just remind ourselves that we are struggling really to make a deep impact in this epidemic. We have to remind ourselves that the numbers of new infection, the numbers of deaths are rising. We are having difficulties really to reach people there. The mitigation programs are not really working. We must do things certainly faster. We must quicken the pace of the action. That whole process really began also to be articulated around the universal access debate. We managed to have almost, I can say, 10,000 people involved in this social kind of dialogue on how, where are the obstacles, how we make sure that we can address them systematically. We managed to have more than 130 countries mobilized in this whole discussion, and seven regional groups which has been able to come and discuss global steering committees comprising different constituencies, civil society and academicians. What came out was, from my point of view, one of the best platforms for creating a movement, a social movement, which can really help us to transform the response. The assessment report, which has been presented to the review, AIDS review in June, is your product. And this assessment report, let us be honest, identified practical strategic identify obstacles, have not been shied to really come out with a clear identification of major problem related to vulnerable groups, name them clearly. But we know a frustration which has been expressed by all of you, that the negotiating text is always difficult to bring all those perspectives. But my point of view is very clear. One, is important first to not forget this assessment report, which is clearly coming out with six areas which we all agree which are important. Two, we need to transform this assessment report, which is your voice, as a platform for action. Of course, link that to the political declaration, but I think the assessment report identifies critical issues. One, priority setting, making sure that the targeting is well done. Two, make sure that the capacity gap in institution like yourself or capacity in the system which are delivering, how we can address them in innovative manner. Three, how we make commodities available to the people in affordable manner, which is very critical. Four, stigma and discrimination, people who are marginalized, how we can use that as a platform to really come to create demand for services, and I can say sustainable. Fifth, sustainable financing. Long-term financing, moving for ad hoc type of approach, transforming this response, and to have to make sure that AIDS is not just deal with in isolation, but we frame it into development framework to make sure that we have. And lastly, accountability. Not just accountability like we have been talking about, but mutual accountability, creating independent bodies, making sure that all the things you are talking about could be happening. So those are the platform which came from you, not from us. Let us not forget about those platforms. What we are doing now is very clear. We are convinced that two breakthroughs were there. One is, from my point of view, is the global target on financing. Even if Stephen said is not, but it is the first time we are mentioning in political declaration 20 to 23 billion. You don't know how much it has been difficult to make that coming in this political declaration. It is a powerful global target which we should have a platform, a framework to make sure that we have advocacy which make people accepting that. These 20 billion, 23 billion has been calculated in based on comprehensive services which can be given to the people, increasing the numbers of people under for treatment towards universal access, access to care, prevention. So all the things you are talking about are based on those financial resources. Second one is a target at country levels. I know that it has been contentious. We have a lot of discussion, but we are convinced, like you said, that no declaration will be implemented if we don't create obligation, if we don't create accountability at the country levels. If it's not owned by the people, if all those global targets are not properly translated into a local target which we can monitor, which we can have, it will be difficult. What we are doing there is very clear. One, we are reviewing all the situation today, and we can tell you that it's not necessarily. Thank you for coming, my dear. Satisfying us, because we know that most of the national target which has been established in the regular plan or like the trend I'm showing you. You have two scenarios. If you look at the blue one, it's the current scenario. In 2010, we will be for PMTCT. If we reach 20% globally, we are less than 9% today. It will be wonderful. But what we want is to quicken the pace, to change the direction, to make sure that we push the countries to redefine, to have an ambitious target setting, to make sure that the pink colors will be the one we want to create. So that's for doing that one. We need you. because we are now communicating with all the regional bodies. African Union will be supported by two or three experts from UNAIDS during this last 3 months to accelerate, to make sure that regional target which has been set could be translated, and country will be supported to have that one. Two, we communicate with PANCOUT and all those regional and the horizontal network to make sure that they can also support their respective countries to come out with ambitious target. Three, we are working with civil society network. I think tomorrow we'll have another meeting here, but we will have a follow-up meetings in each region to see how real civil society could be strongly involved in this all target. And we will have a framework for accountability, what we call accountability framework for each UN agencies, making sure that the role is spelled out clearly, what they should do to support this process at country levels. So those are a few steps I want just to not take too much of your time, but which are critical if we want really to make this a reality by November, December. I know that in each country is particular. It will be difficult for some countries to reopen the debate, to make people deciding on that one. But we personally feel that if it's associated to resource base, it's associated to a discussion which we had in universal access, how to quicken the pace by improving capacity and others. Certainly many countries will be happy to reopen this debate. But if it's no incentive, no, I think it will be not easy if we don't have also your pressure on the backup side like you have been doing during this all process. But again, let us not forget, assessment report is very important. It is your voice. It is a platform for creating a real movement to really make sure that we'll go towards universal access. And locking ourselves in the forced debate and not being happy with the declaration and losing the momentum which can transform the fight against HIV/AIDS will be pity.
Thank you very much. And we are glad to have now the view from an activist living with HIV/AIDS. Welcome, Sipho Mthathi from TAC, South Africa.
Thanks. Sorry for coming late. I had badge issues, so I was trying to negotiate my way in. I'm sorry for having missed the larger part of the discussion, because I think it's a really critical discussion, particularly 3 months after the declaration, was established. And I think it set very specific starting points, which I think provide entry points for our work. I do think, however, that we have to, as much as I see the enthusiasm that has begun and I note the commitment that's beginning to be displayed by UN agencies, particularly UNAIDS, specifically with regards to providing technical and other support at regional level. And that's important. But I think that, again, we must remember that we have the hindsight of the 3x5 campaign, which I think provided many lessons, including the fact that we've got to be prepared in going ahead and in pushing for targets, particularly to deal with the political resistance head on. Because if we don't do that, and that is for me, and I think for many activists, is already emerging as the biggest threat to universal access, and that we can initiate all these beautiful processes which are about doing the necessary thing of mobilizing people and making sure that a movement, is strengthened, that works in a collaborative fashion between and brings together government, civil society, and various other stakeholders. But I do think that we've got to deal with we've got to put a plan in place regarding how we're going to deal with political resistance. Again, to make an example, already in my country, in South Africa, we know, and we've started hearing the political resistance, and we know that if we don't do that, that South Africa is not going to set targets. The rest of the region, you know, is then going to be held back by one country. And we've already seen, you know, how South Africa has tried to hold the Abuja Declaration, which, you know, I think is the best thing that's come out of the UN process so far, because it sets very specific targets that are a critical starting point for countries. So I think I wanted to emphasize that. Again, the issue of community involvement, because again, from an activist perspective, there were huge issues and difficulties that we experienced trying to engage with the preparatory process for ANGAS, and trying to give input at country level so that, you know, community and activist voices are heard. And it was disappointing in many cases where, you know, UNAIDS particularly accepted country reports where it was clear that there had been no input from civil society. And so that's going to be critical moving ahead. And I'm interested to hear, you know, how, you know, UN agencies are going to take a different approach to countries who actually don't abide by the principles of ANGAS and by the principles, you know, the three ones and all of the principles, which I think set a very good framework for, you know, a collaborative approach to managing the AIDS epidemic, particularly making sure that the voices of people living with HIV and communities are heard. And so those are already, we have to reflect on the fact that the failure of the G8 meeting has really set back, in a way, our work, because it was, you know, the G8 which first, you know, purported this goal of universal access by 2010. But the failure of the, you know, negotiation rounds means that the money is not going to come. And again, we're going to have to fight about resources. And so it's a critical question for us to think about how we're going to put the pressure on both the multilateral agencies, but also the countries with money who need to put the money on the table, you know, to show their commitment. So those were the three critical points I wanted to start with, which I would have made in my presentation.
Thank you very much, Ibo. And now we would like to open the floor for discussion. Anybody from the audience or even from the panel that wants to react to what has been said, please go to the microphone, identify yourself, and let us know what you think about this.
Yeah, sure. Good morning, and thank you very much for a very interesting set of presentations. My name is Rachel Guglielmo, and I work for the Open Society Institute. And following up on the last presentation, really, I wanted to ask if someone from UNAIDS could talk a little bit more about your plans for supporting the country-level process of setting national targets, because we would like to work with you in putting pressure on governments to include civil society representatives in that process, so that we're in a position to monitor the targets once they've been set. Thanks.
Would you like to? Yes, maybe. Let me. No. One, two, three, four. One is we are working. We already issued a guidelines which reduce the numbers of indicators from 200 something to 11. Indicators, which is what has been discussed, and it is on the assessment report, the back of assessment report, which are very critical indicators, which has been negotiated with you. Two, we are now sending a guidelines with WHO jointly to the countries on the process of target setting at the country level, which will be issued by end of this month, early September, which is a very critical Three, we inform all the our UCCs at the whole country levels. UCC is the UNAIDS country coordinators to work closely with you and with government, with all others partners, particularly also bilaterals and others to bring a consultation around the table to look at the target setting, like I was saying, because how to revisit, how to quicken the pace, how to make sure that this all discussion we had around universal access can be featured in this all discussion. I forgot to say before, maybe I should have said four, could I be the first? We are reviewing now, almost we have in-house 60 countries feedback on what is exactly, region by region, what is the existing target. They are all really ambitious. They are not. They will really go to the direction we are having. We have this critical analysis going on, and we can make that also available to you. And I said that also we don't want to make a disconnect with regional bodies. Let us be very clear. Even if African Union, all the debate, all the thing, we work together, you and us, to make sure that Abuja target setting will be a reality. It should have never happened without this joint. So, but if we now suddenly marginalize those regional body, it will be very difficult to have a pressure on the country, like I don't know any countries which are resistant. It will be very difficult to have a pressure. I don't see any UN agencies just coming and imposing a new target setting to any countries. But African Union collectively can do. So we said we will have a expert, two or three experts, full-time backing African Union, because we know capacity is lacking there to really accelerate this process, to support countries to take their position paper and try to make that as a reference for a country ambitious target setting. And communicating with, I said PANCAP already, communicating with all the CES, communicating with horizontal cooperation to make sure that also they can come with. And lastly, what we want is to have a mechanism to collect that, to consolidate and come out with a kind of regional goals, which can be country goals, but also consolidated, aggregated into regional goals for the end of the year. Those are the process. And I think it's important that, like I said, civil society could really also come, like you were saying, in unified manner with a framework which can help us to cooperate together and to push this agenda. We should not make this momentum just passing without taking action. Those are the few things I can say concretely.
Can I add, as I'm from UNAIDS as well, Michelle, can I add to your...
Oh,
I'm here as well, hey.
Yes. This is Andy Seal.
Andy Seal, also from UNAIDS. Rachel, thanks for your question. And really just to build on what Michelle was saying, there's a few other practical things that we're doing that I'd like you to know about. We're also aware that often our own country staff need some support in being able to offer assistance to civil society at national level, in being able to ensure that there is full participation in the various processes. So we've got a four-day capacity building meeting for our own staff coming up next month, which we organised straight after the UNGAS meeting to make sure that we were in a position to actually ensure that civil society were engaged at a national level in the target setting process. We've identified some additional resources as well that will be determined at national level how they're going to be used, you know, for whether it will be some kind of meeting or other mechanism to get that kind of input into that target setting process. And really, we're also looking to, as Michelle was saying, encourage at a regional level through Omalulu, has already talked about some of the work with the African Civil Society Coalition, similar activities there, so that we're supporting that level of engagement as well. Communication is also critical in all of this. I think that one of the things that most of the speakers touched on is that encouraging civil society to appreciate what tools are available and how they can be used to keep the promises, to implement the promises that have been made, and to also fill in the gaps where declarations are lacking. We just need to be continually communicating with civil society and getting basic tools out there, and we're working with a number of partners to do that. There's some information left at the front from what happened in the July meeting, in the June meeting, for example, as well.
Can I just...
Yeah, Kieran Daly from ICASO. I think it's worth in this discussion remembering that the New York meeting was about two different things. One was a review of the implementation of the Declaration of Commitment. And I think the New York meeting largely forgot about that. And, you know, there were a lot of input from civil society in reports, but a lot of it wasn't included. And I think it's been said by a number of people how many of the reports from the countries didn't actually get input from a broader spectrum of civil society and others. And many of the reports actually didn't really mean anything. And they weren't really, governments weren't really held to account even for the implementation of Declaration of Commitment. Not even thinking about the political declaration that they then made. And I think people have spoken well enough in terms of how the political declaration itself was pretty much a failure in most people's minds. And we can say that largely because civil society really mobilized, and particularly spearheaded by the African civil society organizations in pushing the Abuja Declaration and the commitments that came out of that. The Abuja Declaration was a proper declaration with targets, as we've heard. The political declaration we got in New York, in most people's opinion, wasn't worth the process. There were some gains. There were definitely some gains, particularly around women and gender, where actually, if you saw the process that was happening, it was civil society that inputted into that to make sure that those the improvements that came out of the political declaration on women and youth, I believe, really came from that. And for me, I'm raising it because I think it's an example of how we really need at the country level to support civil society to push their governments in terms of both target setting and holding them to account. And without that, I don't think we're going to get anywhere, because we'll just have political statements, we'll have targets that won't be met, and then we'll come to review the targets and we'll forget to review them because we'll move on. And so I think it's supporting that civil society at the country level particularly to hold their governments to account and make sure they report on what they've done. Thank you.
Can I just add really quickly that what's really critical going forward is how all of us need to be accountable for what happens next at every level. And that's what we're trying to do through this conference. For me, the most striking thing in the declaration is this inability of all governments to agree to name the most vulnerable, the communities most at risk. And what that says to me is there are still incredible structural, legal, systemic, social, religious, cultural barriers in many countries. In all countries, there are social and cultural barriers to really addressing the fundamentals of this epidemic. And as you said, Omalulu, that means at country level, we need to hold at civil society, all civil society communities need to hold governments to account and change those structural barriers. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to respond. At the international level, UNAIDS, as you've articulated really clearly, needs to hold its co-sponsoring organizations to account, needs to set in place the mechanisms for monitoring, to support countries, to support community, and groups like ICASO mobilizing community organizations, NIS mobilizing HIV professionals, doctors, nurses, researchers, policy people in countries to hold our governments to account. And it means countries that are perhaps more progressive, at least in terms of not having the structural and legal and systemic barriers to addressing vulnerability. You know, we're talking about homophobia and gender, women, injecting drug users, sex workers, the most vulnerable communities, governments that are more progressive, trying to work to pressure governments that are more restrictive to change. And it means using groups like the UN Human Rights, the new Human Rights Council, to set standards for what all countries that participate in the UN system, in the international system, should adhere to in order to make change. So I'll just leave it at that.
Microphone two, please.
My name is Joanna Mangueira. I am from Mozambique, a sub-Saharan African country. I am the chief executive of the National AIDS Council. I would like to raise 2 points. One of them is related with the fact that we need to deliver, and to deliver says means to put things in action and to deliver results which are in accordance with the impact which we need to be shown. So the first point we'd like to raise is that we need to see which kind of systems we need to have in our countries in terms of not just to make advocacy, but in terms of concretize the plans with the right partners. So the first thing is decentralization. How can we decentralize the whole decision maker process? To decentralize means that we need to have the voices of the community level people. But more than that, what we need is to make things happen at that level. And to make things happen at that level, we need to strengthen capacity. And it's not possible to strengthen capacity without strengthening also the public sector capacity. So in my point of view, I would like to raise this point, this aspect. I think when we speak about a more comprehensive approach for combating AIDS, we need to see that the systems must be changed in terms of putting people make their own decision, but at the same time to give the tools they need to put the things happen at the grassroots level. The other thing which I would like to also to say here to UNAIDS is that I think UNAIDS has a very important task at in each country, but more at grassroots level. How can UNAIDS bring together people, technical assistants, which can be side by side with the influent personalities and leaders from the grassroots level, and to see how can we put our hands together and to make things happen at that level? I'm sorry with my English.
Thank you very much. Microphone one, please.
Yeah. Hi. My name's Mark Hayward. I'm from the Treatment Action Campaign and the AIDS Law Project in South Africa. I just want to make a few comments and questions. I mean, for me, I think the critical thing with the declaration, the political declaration coming out of the high-level meeting, is to recognize its weaknesses, but now that we have to work its positives. Because although we got upset about it, there's a lot in there that opens doors for us if, as civil society, we mobilize effectively around that declaration. And two things in particular have been said in this meeting by SIPO and others. One is the targets. We have to get the targets, and we, as civil society, have to have a plan to make sure that we get the targets. And the second, as Michelle said, is the finances. How do we make sure that now that there's stated in the Declaration of Commitment that this is what is needed, that we actually get it? So my recommendation is that I think our weakness in the past with the 2001 Declaration of Commitment was that to some extent civil society let go for a few years. And we can't afford to let go of this political declaration and then wake up in 2008 and say, oh, look, it's time to review, and we've just noticed that there's serious backsliding. We have to hold on to this thing, and we have to have a plan. as to how we hold on to this thing. So, for example, I'm not making any hard suggestions, but I would say to civil society, you know, how do we use something like December the 1st, World AIDS Day, this year? That World AIDS Day should be focused on the declaration of commitment and its implementation, whether it's a piece of paper from 6 months ago, whether it's being practically implemented. The second thing I want to raise with ICASO is that I think there's a real need now for, and I hate international meetings, but for a annual council of AIDS service organizations, if you like. And I'm not criticizing ICASO, but a place, an efficient space where AIDS service organizations, not 10,000 of us, but representative and credible of all regions and of all movements, can come together and look at this declaration and say, where is it happening? Where is it not happening? Where do we need to concentrate our efforts internationally? Where do we need to work together to support at a national level? So I'd appeal to you to look at that. And then the final thing I just want to say is on the issue of funding. You know, Peter said in his opening that no credible AIDS plan should go unfunded. But I think Peter, and that's right, but I think it needs to be extended. I think it needs to be said that no credible AIDS NGO should go unfunded, because you're not going to get credible AIDS plans without credible AIDS NGOs. And we know at the moment that most of us are struggling to work the Global Fund, which is meant to be the solution to some of our problems, precisely because government is so inept and uncoordinated that national proposals that contain NGO proposals are going down, and we are left unable to reach the very communities that people insist that we reach, despite the fact that we have the capacity and the means to get to those communities if we didn't have to spend hours and months trying to raise money. Thanks.
Thank you. We have time for a very short comment at microphone two.
I'd just like to take up where Mark's left off, actually. I think the thing that struck me most about this panel is that the role of civil society is absolutely critical in taking this forward, and yet at the same time, there's not enough attention paid to looking at national plans and saying what resources are actually allocated to that advocacy role that NGOs play. And that's a fear in a way, because what NGOs generally do is do their advocacy work on the back of their service funds. And that's got to stop. We've got to start saying what proportion of funding are organisations that play a critical advocacy role at national level. Why aren't they getting money to do that work? And I welcome the comments by UNAIDS about the contribution you're going to make for capacity building for your own staff and ensuring civil society's participation, and I think that is a welcome role. There needs to be much more of that happening across our dialogue with donors, and I really don't think we're getting there at all in terms of putting direct resources for advocacy effort into discussions about funding.
Okay, I think that the bottom line is that we are not satisfied with what happened in June in New York, for different reasons that have been very well explained and detailed by several speakers. I think this is a particular moment for the international organizations. If we look at that, it took 5 weeks in order to stop the war in Middle East, if it has been stopped, which I'm not completely sure. That speaks about the problem, not of the UN Secretary General, who tried to do his best, but the lack of political will of major players at the United Nations system. Just translate this to an issue like HIV/AIDS, which has gained attention, but not that much attention at the headlines as a daily killing of civil people at both sides of the border has been happening. So I think the main message for us is, if we want to in some way fill the gap that has been left after this declaration, we need that all our organizations, including UNAIDS obviously, should be following very closely what is happening from now on. I completely agree what what has been said with from the Treatment Action Group in South Africa, that we cannot wait until 2008 or 2011 and look back. So it's not a formal proposal. I'm just talking on behalf of myself. We didn't discuss this so far at the Governing Council of the International Society, but I am sure that we would be ready, together with UNAIDS, to convene an annual review in a small group with obviously all the organizations that are here and probably others that are not represented. Maybe we could convene and say, okay, what has been happening in the last 12 months, and what are the actions to be taken in order to come to the next year and then see if our efforts in some way are being successful or not. Because if not, this is a recipe for failure. If we wait, this is a recipe for failure. Our politicians will not do anything if they are not submitted to enough pressure coming from the civil society organizations, and we are proud to say that the International Society is also a civil society organization. So with that, we come to the close, and I thank you very much for being here so soon, so early, and see you.